Here are some of the stories NPR is following today. More than 80 people were killed and hundreds of others wounded today in a series of coordinated attacks by insurgents in half a dozen Iraqi cities. Three American soldiers are among the dead. And President Bush was interviewed today by government prosecutors investigating the leak of an undercover CIA operative's name. Valerie Plame's identity was made public in a column by Robert Novak last July. Details on these stories coming up later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. This week, Spaceship One, a private venture, brought a human into space and safely back to Earth. Last week, a presidential commission released a report calling for more private involvement in space exploration and a change in how NASA does business. Tomorrow, join Ira Flatow on Science Friday for a look at the future of spaceflight and the role of private industry in exploring space. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. The flurry of decisions continues to come from the Supreme Court as justices wrap up their current session. Today, the court addressed the controversy over whether or not papers from Vice President Dick Cheney's Energy Task Force will be made public. The court also ruled on a case involving people on death row. Earlier, the court had ruled that death penalty decisions by judges were not appropriate, that those decisions had to be made by juries. There are still hundreds of men and women on death row whose sentences were handed down by judges, not juries. They appealed to have their cases considered. And joining us now to talk about these decisions is David Savage. He covers the Supreme Court for the Los Angeles Times. He joins us by phone from his office here in Washington. David, good to talk to you again.
Hi, Neil.
Remind us on the Cheney question, how the Energy Task Force arrived in the Supreme Court.
Well, some environmentalists, the Sierra Club and some other groups went to court trying to get information on the question of did private outside lobbyists meet with Cheney's people when they were drawing up this energy task force proposal. The White House had refused to disclose any information. They went to court, and a judge basically ordered the White House to turn over documents describing who was in the meetings and what they generally what they talked about, what subjects were discussed. A court of appeals upheld that order. The White House appealed to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court today basically overturned the lower court judges and sent the case back for further hearings, but basically wrote an opinion that says, look, the conversations between the president and his top advisors are entitled to the sort of highest level of confidentiality, and basically only in the most extreme case, like when the president is under a criminal probe, can you force the White House, can a judge force the White House to disclose information like this?
And even, as I understand it, even if the court should eventually rule against the administration and force the release of these documents, it's not going to happen before the election.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Sort of at the minimum, the first point to make is that this puts this off to after the election. I think from Cheney's point of view or the White House point of view, this could be embarrassing if it came out that, you know, Ken Lay had met with the Energy Policy Task Force. But this will put off any of that until after the election.
And this was a 7-2 decision, so it would seem that the contentious vote, that of Justice Antonin Scalia, was not a factor. Many groups asked, and newspapers and a lot of other people asked, that he recuse himself from this case. He refused.
Yes, that's right. He went to duck hunting down in Louisiana with Cheney 3 weeks after the court agreed to take up the case. When that came out, there was a lot of hue and cry that he should step down from the case. He wrote a long opinion saying, look, this is really not about Dick Cheney. It's about the office of the vice president, and I'm going to stay in this case. But as you say, in the end, his vote was not crucial. He and Justice Clarence Thomas wrote a separate opinion going a little further and basically saying this case should be thrown out entirely. The majority opinion stopped one step short of that. It sent it back to a lower court to sort of reconsider the matter and take into account the president's concerns. But Scalia and Cheney would have Scalia and Thomas would have thrown out the case entirely.
The two who voted in dissent were Justices Ruth Bader Ginsburg and David Souter, who said the judge in the case ought to be able to look at the records and decide what should be released.
Yes, Ruth Ginsburg said, I don't see any problem here. You know, the White House has not responded in detail to this request for documents. The White House could have gone in and said, hey, you're asking for too much. We'll turn over some of this, but not all of it. The White House didn't do that, and Ruth Ginsburg thought that in that situation, the White House should be forced to respond. They shouldn't be able to just get out from under the order.
We're talking with David Savage of the Los Angeles Times about today's Supreme Court decisions. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Another much closer vote in the death penalty case. This, as I mentioned earlier, stemmed from an earlier Supreme Court ruling.
Yes, it was a sort of a question of retroactivity. That is, the court a couple years ago said, as you described, that juries really ought to make these decisions before sending somebody to death. Then the question was, well, what about all the hundreds of guys who were on death row and who were sentenced by judges? And the court today basically said, we're not going to go back and unravel all those death sentences. We're not going to apply this basic principle retroactively to give these guys new death sentences, a new sentencing hearing. So it just basically upholds more than 100 death sentences. In a few states, not every state, only I think 9 states use this procedure of allowing the judge to make the final decision. But
what's their rationale? I mean, if this is not acceptable in the present and the future, why was it acceptable in the past?
That's a very good question, Neil. That certainly was the argument. But the court, I think, is very much inclined in a whole lot of areas to say, if we hand down a new decision now in 2004 or 2006 or 2008, we're not going to require the lower courts to go back and unravel all sorts of cases that are finally decided. It seems like it seems terribly unfair when somebody is sitting on death row, but that has been their tendency to say, we're not going to apply these decisions retroactively.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, we are still awaiting what many people expect to be the major Supreme Court decisions of this session.
Yes, the Guantanamo case, the sort of president's powers in the war on terrorism, those are all still out there. There's also a big case on internet pornography, whether the government can make it a crime to send for commercial websites to have sexually explicit material on their websites. And there's also 2 Miranda cases that are fairly big for the area of sort of police questioning. They have about 11 cases to decide yet, and we expect they'll be decided early next week.
In the cases of Guantanamo and the U.S. citizens being held without charge, I know that the justices aren't supposed to be swayed by current events necessarily, but they heard these cases, then the eruption of the scandal at Abu Ghraib and the whole controversy about the torture memos at the Justice Department and the release of these documents by the White House just the other day. How can that not have an effect?
I think it will have an effect. It's always hard to gauge how much effect, but I think it'll affect how the opinions were written or are being written. I think it'd be very hard for a lot of the justices to go entirely with the administration, whose argument was at the time. Their argument was basically, trust us. We, the United States, don't torture people. We don't mistreat inmates. You should trust the executive branch to do the right thing. I think it'd be very hard for a majority of the court to buy that view right now.
We'll find out, I guess, perhaps as soon as Monday. David Savage, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
David Savage covers the Supreme Court for the Los Angeles Times and joined us by phone from his office in Washington. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.